Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're having a great day. What an interesting game last night. It's amazing. Amazing. The takeaways some people have are far afield from what normal people have, but we'll get to those. The Doug Gottlieb Show is brought to you by Farmers at Farmers. We've seen almost everything, so we're going to cover almost anything when it's game time. Have an experienced player help you stay ahead of the game. Put their experience into play at farmers.com.
We are Farmers. Bum, ba, da,
bum, 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 bum. We have a lot to get to. Let's start with last night's game in which the Toronto Raptors, ho-hum, beat the very depleted Golden State Warriors. And I've operated under this premise for the most part, which is if the Warriors were healthy, they're the better team, the Warriors would win the championship because together, Klay, Steph, KD, Draymond, and Andre Iguodala form a, not a perfect team, but a close to perfect team, especially in the 2019 world in the NBA. Last night, they didn't have Kevon Looney, their starting center. They have a banged up Andre Iguodala. Klay Thompson didn't play, and Kevin Durant didn't play. And again, I operate under the premise that if they're all healthy, then what Draymond said would in fact be true.
You know, not having anyone makes a difference because everyone, you know, when you assemble the team, everyone brings something different. You know, no one cares if guys are hurt. Everybody wants to see us lose. I'm sure people are happy they're hurt. We just got to continue to battle and win the next game, go back to Toronto, win game 5, come back to Oracle, win game 6, and then celebrate. Fun times ahead.
Fun times ahead. The problem with that is we assume that the superpowers of Klay Thompson will return the second he steps out in the court. We assume that the superpowers of Kevin Durant will return as soon as he steps out in the court. Any of you guys ever pulled a hamstring? Do you know what doesn't happen when you pull a hamstring? You're not fine and 100% and the same guy a week later, let alone 5 days later. And you can tell me, like, you understand modern medicine. Yes, I actually do understand modern medicine. Even if they were able to surgically put a new hamstring in there, you don't have 5 days for that thing to heal. Anyone who's ever pulled their hamstring knows you feel fine, you feel fine, you feel fine. Then it feels like somebody shot a BB in the back of your leg and you don't feel fine. So Klay Thompson goes from unable to run down the floor, take me out right now. I can't even hug and congratulate my teammates to 5 days later, he'll be back fine. And Kevin Durant probably has a pull is like, you know, it's a partial tear really of his calf muscle. Even if he returns, he's not going to be the same guy. I don't think the Raptors are better, but I think the Raptors are healthier, and that's why I think the Raptors are going to win this thing. Because you do get to a point of, you get to that point of no return. It's not like the Raptors are going to lay down anyway. They're not going to play good basketball anyway, and they're pretty damn good, and when playing against, even if it's 75 or 80% of Klay, that's not the superpowers we came to expect. And this isn't like, you know, in the olden days, first of all, like Willis Reed, the whole Willis Reed story, like he didn't play that well. It was an emotional game, and he came in. And back then, you could hide a big guy because he could just stand in the lane and push people when they came near him. You can't hide anybody now. That's the sport. That's why DeMarcus Cousins can't be out on the floor. You're already trying to hide Steph Curry some because he's not a great defender and you need all his energy and offense. Think you can hide Klay Thompson, who's your best on-ball defender, or hide Kevin Durant? Like, what makes Kevin Durant special is not just that he's tall, it's that he can run, jump, move laterally, handle the basketball. Like, all those things you need your calf muscle to do. Oh, and you can't hide him on defense. This isn't baseball where Kirk Gibson can come limping up and hit a home run. Kirk Gibson would have to go play in the field, and in basketball, we can actually make sure we hit it to your position. I think the Raptors are going to win the championship. I don't think they're the best team. I'm not sure they're the second best team. But that doesn't matter. They're the only healthy team remaining in this thing, or healthier than the Golden State Warriors. It doesn't mean there's been any asterisk by it. There's no asterisk by the 2015 championship for the Warriors. And can we also stop with the, well, Steph couldn't do it by himself? Nobody can. Nobody can. Here's Steve Kerr talking about Steph Curry last night.
Steph was incredible. The stuff he does is, he does things that, honestly, I don't think anybody has ever done before. The way he plays the game, the way he shoots it, and the combination of his ball handling and shooting skills, it's incredible to watch. He was amazing.
You kidding me? It was incredible to watch. Anyone who took away anything other than Steph Curry's awesome, you need to learn to get HD put into your... You're watching in standard def. Or you have completely unrealistic expectations for what a great player looks like. I mean, even the people are like, well, this is what LeBron was like last year. No, it wasn't. By the way, LeBron didn't win. They did get swept. Did they not? That did happen last year, didn't it? I believe it did. The year before, it was a gentleman's sweep. They won one game, gentleman's sweep. But even in those circumstances, LeBron wasn't without his starting two, his starting three, his starting center. Like, dudes are backups for a reason. And then once you get to the bench, you're like, man, I totally forgot he was even on the Warriors. You're like, wait, who is that? I saw Kevin Durant dapping guys up in the hallway after the game, and I was like, I don't even know who that is. I actually don't know who that is. Like, I'm a basketball guy. I know most everybody in the NBA. And then once I looked him up, I was like, oh, yeah. That's right. Now I remember. But it took me a while. Took me a while to go and go, oh, that's right. They drafted Jacob Evans. I forgot. So lots of things should be put to bed after last night. We can probably, when we get into this later, stop with the Draymond and Iggy are Hall of Famers, right? Because even if you're not a Hall of Famer in terms of your production, when you have Clay and KD, you would think there'd be a little bit more production when you don't have Clay and KD. We've somehow misassociated great role player with a great team, which is a completely necessary position and role to fill with historically great player. Those two things are not one and the same. Robert Ory's not a Hall of Famer. Derek Fisher's not a Hall of Famer. They both made big plays, and championships don't happen if they're not in those situations. Steve Kerr was a great role player. He is not a Hall of Famer. Neither is Andre Iguodala. And frankly, you know, I don't actually think empirically Draymond Green should be. But the idea that Steph somehow wasn't good enough when it's 1-on-5, and the idea that the Warriors, they're going to be fine. Klay comes back, KD comes back, bada boom, bada bing, bada bang, another championship. Dynasty lives on. Tell me when that's ever happened. When dudes come off of pulled muscles and they're like, no, I'm good.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Clint Azubuike is a former player and a good one. Grew up in Tulsa, played at UK, like Kentucky, then played in the NBA, including playing for the Warriors. He's now an analyst for NBC Bay Area. You can follow him on Twitter and on IG at Kelenna. That's K-E-L-E-N-N-A 7. He joins us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Kelenna, thanks for joining us. How would you characterize last night's game?
I would characterize it as the Warriors being undermanned, honestly.
Yeah.
Steph played his heart out, and 47 points. And people underestimate how hard that is to do when an incredible defensive team is focusing their entire defensive game plan on you. They're helping on every screen you come off of. And he goes out there and gets 47 points and 8 rebounds, by the way, and 7 assists. So he was wonderful, but he just didn't have enough help. The Warriors didn't have enough firepower. And honestly, the Raptors had to win that game. If they lost that game, to me, the series is pretty much over because the Warriors are probably getting reinforcements back for Game 4 and the rest of the series. So the Raptors did what they had to do. They wrote "Let It Rip" on the board. I guess they did that. Danny Green, you get 18 points out of him. It's going to be a tough night for the Warriors, and we knew that when we saw Danny Green knocking down all those shots after pretty much every run the Warriors tried to make. It seemed like he had an answer for it, or Kyle Lowry was knocking down threes, having answers for the Warriors' runs. And then for the Warriors, there was lineups out there that probably had never played together or didn't play together as much, and there were guys passing up open shots that normally Klay Thompson would take and Kevin Durant would take if those guys were out there. Defensively, the Warriors just weren't good enough, and there was some defensive possessions where they weren't able to rotate out the shooters. They were just a step late with their rotations at times. There were too many mistakes, bad transition defense. So the Warriors had to be close to perfect, and they probably needed the Raptors to not play as well as they did and not shoot the ball as well as they did, but the Raptors had way too many guys playing well, and Steph Curry was the only one that really had it going for the Warriors, which you kind of expected.
Right.
But the Warriors just needed more.
Yeah. Okay, there's a bunch of stuff I want to get to here. First, the idea of reinforcements on paper makes total sense. But, dude, you played long enough. I played. You pull your hamstring, and 5 days later, you're good? Like, we're all operating in the assumption that if, in fact, Klay and KD come back, they'll be fine. But the reasonable expectations are they won't. Whether or not they can go hard, or if they go hard, they pull that thing again. Like, I do think we're operating under this false sense of what they'll look like when they return.
I kind of agree with you. We do have to remember, though, that it was kind of characterized as a mild strain, not a pull all the way. And I'm like you, I've pulled my hamstring before. It took me longer than 5 days. I know that. And I remember I had a teammate, Corey Maggette, who I played with, and he had a string of hamstring injuries. And the reason was because he just kept coming back when it was 70%, when it was 80%, and he almost felt like he was good, but his hamstring didn't feel like the good hamstring. His legs didn't feel the same. He could still kind of tell the difference between the two hamstrings, and he would come back feeling like he was good, and then he would restrain it or pull it again. So he went through a season of that. And a hamstring injury is one of those where if you do come back and you're 80, even 90%, you're susceptible to restrain it or pull it. And you can ask Chris Paul about hamstrings. He's had some issues there too. And it's one of those injuries where you just have to take your time. So I'm like you, I'm hoping that when he steps out there, he's 100% just for his future and not having to deal with hamstring injuries going forward, just a string of hamstring injuries if he's coming back and he's not all the way right. But I am encouraged though, because I watched him warm up before game 3, and I think they'd already decided way ahead of when they actually released that he was not playing, that he was not going to play. And I think that was the right decision to make, even if he was moving well. But he was really moving well, and it didn't really seem like he was trying to compensate for that hamstring or he was laboring at all. He wasn't going full speed, but he was going at a good pace, and there was no limp. It didn't seem like he was having issues with it. And if you listen to him talk, he was saying he found it hard to believe that he wouldn't play in game three. Before game three, that's kind of the way he was talking. So that's how good he was feeling.
Right.
So I think it's great that the Warriors sat him out for game three, and he's got another day in between here where he gets to treat it and all the nuanced treatments you want to give him and all those things. And then hopefully he's ready to go for game four.
Okay, so let's get to the Mark Stevens thing. He's a minority owner of the team.
Yeah.
And there's a weird sequence there where Quinn Cook twice in a row drives in and dude just bat his shot. Like, bro, we need to work on your finishing package there or get up to where it's a goaltend.
Right.
So Kyle Lowry goes diving in the stands and Stevens just kind of, you know, pushes him. And Lowry gets him ejected, says something. Now he's barred for the games, you know, upon further investigation. Look, you've played, but I almost feel like we're getting to kind of an unreasonable sense. Do I think Mark Stevens' behavior was acceptable? No, it's completely unacceptable. But it's actually not that far a step from the Drake thing, right? Where guys on the sideline think they're part of the game and they get into trash talking with the other team. They think like it's all cool and like they're not part of the game. I don't know. I feel like we're going a little bit overboard in our reaction to a dude. I understand that you want it to be completely unacceptable, but like, all right, you can't come to the rest of the finals and you've gotten embarrassed on national TV. Feels like enough for me. What about you?
The difference between what happens with Drake and what happened with Kyle Lowry and Mark Stevens last night is Drake isn't laying hostile hands on the opponent. You know what I mean? He's massaging his coach. He's talking trash with his friends from the other team, KD, and well, KD hasn't played, but Steph and Klay and other guys. He's just talking trash, but there's no hands being laid on Klay Thompson or the other players.
Right.
Or that would be an issue.
Right.
And I think in this situation, Kyle Lowry dives in there. He's just doing his job. He's on the court. If you're sitting in the front seat, you have to keep your head on a swivel because a guy could come flying over there going for a loose ball. And that's what Kyle Lowry did. You can say maybe he was a little extra or whatever, but that's what he did. And as a fan, you can't put your hands on a player in that way. Now, if you're trying to help him up or you're trying to push him off of you, trying to save someone that's sitting close to you, if you're protecting your wife, that's one thing. But I think in this situation, the Warriors and the league looked at it, and they're going, yeah, he shoved him. That's kind of a hostile act. Obviously, Kyle Lowry took it that way,
yeah.
And it looked that way. And just by the interaction afterwards, where they were kind of yelling at each other, whatever, you could tell that was the case. So in this situation, I just feel like he crossed the line, and I feel like the Warriors handled it pretty well. Now he is a minority owner or investor in the Warriors. You can't ban him for life, I don't think, but obviously they banned him for the rest of the playoffs and in this finals, and I think that was the right thing to do. And then Kyle Lowry also said he felt like he uttered some really hostile words that crossed the line. I don't know if there was racist stuff said there, but Kyle Lowry felt really strongly about it, so I think the Warriors really had to do that.
Let's get to the KD stuff. What do you think he does?
Honestly, it's kind of like what we were talking about with Klay. I'm optimistic that he'll be back for game four, but this is really the first day. Today is the first day that he's practicing, and everybody's just kind of assuming that it's going to go great, but that calf is another one of those injuries where if you're 80-90% on that thing, you could restrain it. That's really close to the Achilles. You don't want to mess with the Achilles. So it's going to be tough to simulate the kind of action that you're going to see from him in the game where he's pushing off of that same leg and trying to explode. But he's going to be going against coaches and I don't know, maybe some players, throw him in there with some token defense and just try to simulate some of the movements that you'll see from him in the game where he's pushing off of that leg, trying to get to his spots. Maybe you have him on defense. You try to attack that leg or you try to make him push off that leg sideways, his lateral movement, what's that going to be like? But we'll be able to tell once he gets in the game, if he does play, if he's favoring that leg or if he seems to be hampered by that at all because he's not going to be as explosive. And best believe the Toronto Raptors are going to try to attack him on the defensive side and really test that leg. And Klay Thompson, the same thing. They're going to try to attack them on the other side of the floor and see if they're really healthy. And the Warriors are going to do their best to make the right decision. It's because, again, you don't want to put these guys at risk of re-injury. And this could be a long series. Obviously, you want to get guys back and healthy. And it was rough watching the Warriors super shorthanded and just being taken advantage of by the Toronto Raptors, a great Toronto Raptors team. But you have to think about the guy's overall career and the big right. picture here. And it's not just about this one game. So is 80% of KD better than no KD? Of course. But for him, is that the case? And if he's more at risk of re-injury, is it smart for KD to play? So they'll make the right decision. And to me, if he's out there, if either one of those guys are out there, it means they're pretty much 100% to me.
Yeah, but they're not. I don't know. We're all making huge, huge assumptions. All right, if they come back and they're close to 100%, you still have faith the Warriors win the series?
I do. I think there's going to be an adjustment period with KD. He's probably going to be a little rusty, more rusty than Klay, obviously, because Klay hasn't sat out as long. But I really think fully healthy, the Warriors are still the more talented team, and I trust the Warriors' defense in key moments to come up with a big stop, and I trust the Warriors' ability to close in close games. I think these two teams are maybe closer than people think.
Yep.
And the Toronto Raptors are really, really talented, and Kawhi Leonard will just kill you without saying a word. He's a silent assassin, and it's almost annoying to watch him play because it doesn't even really look pretty to me, but he's just so effective, and he gets it done. His pull-up jumper game, he comes off a ball screen super slow and just gets to his spots. He's a bulldozer. He's pretty much the guy that ended Looney's playoff career, although I'm hearing he may come back, which is incredible. But I just feel like the Warriors as a team are still better talent-wise, and then they have the closers, the guys with ice in their veins, obviously Andre Iguodala hitting that huge shot in game two to get the job done. It could be a 6 or 7 game series, but I trust the Warriors and their closing ability and their championship mentality and the confidence they have and the swagger they play with to get it done if fully healthy.
Awesome stuff. Kalena Azubuike, of course, works for NBC Bay Area. Follow him on Twitter at Kalena7. Kalena, thanks so much for joining us, man. Really appreciate it.
No problem, man. Good talking to you, Doug.
That's
take care.
Kalena Azubuike joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Rick Bucher, Bleacher Report, Fox Sports 1, joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Buke, do you buy the Paul Pierce story?
No, not at all. Which one? Because I think he's denied it at this point that it was... I mean, first it was he soiled himself, and then it was, no, I only soiled the Lakers in that series. So I don't know what to believe, but I am not going to get carried off the way he was carried off if indeed I'm worried about me having soiled myself.
Correct. It was an overreaction. He thought he'd torn up his knee, and maybe there was a little leakage in the backside, but that's not why he was carried off like he was dying.
Exactly. And it took him an awful... I mean, he was carried that way. If it was... It's just that the whole story doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And yeah, I just... No. So ultimately, no, I'm not buying any of it.
Okay, so let's get to today, and then maybe we'll work back to last night. Steve Kerr said moments ago, there was no setback. He thought today would be the day that KD be back out in the court, and there's still some sort of hurdle to be cleared. Yeah. You actually kind of predicted this thing. You're like, look, I don't know if he plays at all in the series. Why is he going to Toronto? Yeah. I thought that's the way in which he could get back on the court because all their guys would be in Toronto. What's really going on with his calf?
Well, essentially, it's a serious injury. And KD wants to find a way to get back on the court, and he wants to convince people that it's worth the risk and that he can play. So he's pushing to get back on the court. And cooler heads are simply prevailing as far as the people around him who are saying, you know, and this is what I heard from the very beginning. They think it's too high of a risk for him to play in this series. We keep looking at this and measuring it in terms of days and the type of injury that he has and the fact that it is a recurrent thing for him is not something that you measure by days. Klay Thompson, very likely to play in game four. Why? Because he doesn't have a history of hamstring issues. And this is in a different category. This is something that is borderline chronic for KD. And as he said when he first did it, it's the worst that I've ever had. So looking at free agency, looking at where he is in his career, looking at what the opportunities and the options that he'd like to weigh this summer, doing something catastrophic to his calf, which is there's a great degree of possibility for that if he were to come back and play in these finals, is simply not worth it. So today he was supposed to play 3-on-3. I don't know whether he played 3-on-3 or not, but there is a certain physical hurdle that he has to get past in order for them to even consider playing him, and quite clearly he didn't get past that today.
Why, or maybe how, is Klay Thompson going to play when he just pulled his hamstring a couple days ago?
I will say this. I had a hamstring pull once upon a time, and I'm not in any way comparing myself to Klay Thompson. But I did go to a doctor who was able to tape me up in a way that alleviated the stress on that hamstring for where it was. And I'd never thought that that was even possible. I thought once you had strained it, pulled it, whatever you did, you had to wait for it to recover. And he taped me up in a way in which I was able to play. Now, was I able to go 100%? Did I fully trust it? No, but I could run without pain. And so I believe there's a way for them to get there. And it, obviously all of it is the degree and the severity. But I'm kind of on this too, which is, Steve Kerr wouldn't be giving him the go ahead if there was still any question that he's not capable of playing. So I'm going to, because Steve Kerr and what I know about him and that he would err on the side of caution, the fact that they've already cleared Klay to play in game four, I don't understand it as you don't, but I know that it's possible.
I know that we all operate on this assumption that they can win without KD, but that's assuming Klay's healthy. Like, he's not healthy. I don't see it.
It's also, are we going to get what we got from DeMarcus Cousins in game two?
Right.
And is Andrew Bogut going to give you even more than he's given you at any point in this series? Because, or is Jordan Bell suddenly going to become something that we've never seen him become? The guy that nobody is talking about that I think his absence had a profound effect on game three, was Kevon Looney. They don't have anybody who can replace what Kevon Looney does. And yeah, I'm less worried about adding another offensive weapon for the Warriors than I am adding some defense that's going to prevent the Raptors from shooting 50% overall, 40% plus from three, and 95-some percent from the free throw line. I think the Raptors are only going to get more comfortable against this impaired Warriors team. And anytime they didn't allow themselves to be trapped on one side of the floor and there was player movement and ball movement, they got anything they wanted. And I don't know that Klay Thompson coming back is going to change that.
This just in from Woj. Brooklyn is trading Allen Crabbe and the number 17 pick in the 2019 draft and a protected first-round pick in 2020 to Atlanta for Torian Prince and a 21 second-round pick. So what this does is it clears $18 million in salary cap space, gives them two max contract slots.
Yes. Opens the door for Kevin Durant to join Kyrie Irving in Brooklyn. And
this is interesting because Brooklyn's actually been here before, right? People forget.
Yes.
There was the, we want Darren. Okay, Darren Williams, and we want Dwight Howard. And they got Darren Williams, and they couldn't get Dwight Howard, and they never got to where they went. Now we're kind of they're back. They're back in this place.
They are.
Look, I lived in the tri-state area for three years, and I can tell you that Brooklyn is on fire, right? It's a place. Williamsburg is as expensive as any place in New York to live. It's hot, and it's a cool, but it's not on the island of Manhattan. It's still the Nets. And I just wonder if, like, are those guys really going to go to the Nets? Is that a reality? Do you think that ultimately becomes a reality?
I believe that Kyrie is going to be there. One way or another, that's where Kyrie is going to end up. Who joins him is the real question. And I know that KD and Kyrie have talked about playing together. I know that they want to play together. The plan is to play together. But the allure of Brooklyn for KD is the part that I'm still having a difficult time wrapping my head around. I still see him, and this was the first heard of him going anywhere, it was to the Knicks. And he has a lot of ties and connections to the Knicks organization already. And so it's until the struggle, and I just told somebody this in the last 24 hours, what I don't know is the depth of the relationship between Kyrie and KD, because ultimately that would have to win out. For everything else that I know about what KD aspires to and the connections that he has with the Knicks just make more sense on that level. But if there is a, hey, you know what, if this is a Russ Westbrook, Paul George, we have a connection, and regardless of where I'm playing, it's more important to me that I'm playing with this guy, that would have to win the day. And I just don't know at this stage if that is what's going to win the day. And as somebody else said to me, whatever you think, KD's probably going to change his mind 25 times between now and when he ultimately makes the decision. So don't go too hard with anything at this point.
Where are we with Anthony Davis?
Anthony Davis is a matter of let's see what the best deals are on the table. And I would imagine that the Knicks are measuring, okay, Kyrie is indeed going to Brooklyn. What is it that we have to do to be able to make sure that KD comes here? If it's acquiring AD, then they sweeten it maybe a little bit more than they would like, but ultimately that's where they go. I don't see any way, anyhow. I know that the Lakers are the preferred destination. Just everything that I know about what Gail Benson has said and the opportunity to make a deal equal or better someplace else, I just find it hard to believe that AD is actually going to wind up with the Lakers.
And then what about the Celtics? Like, I've been told the Celtics, they don't care that AD hasn't listed them as,
yes,
as a team he'd like to go to. Where are they if they lose Kyrie Irving?
It's hard for me to imagine, and you can say all you want, we don't care, we'd still make a deal for him. But if he's not going to re-up with you, other people, what you would have to give up to get him is not going to be commensurate with what New York, or even the Lakers for that matter, are willing to offer. Because Boston would have to give up some of their young talent, and you'd have to do it knowing that AD is going to walk out the door a year from now. That just seems like a bad business maneuver. This is posturing and saying, we're not afraid of you saying we're not going to be on the list. The reality is the risk is too great if he holds true and says, I'll happily come there and play for a year, but I'm not signing up long term. That's a deal that the Celtics can't ignore.
Rick Bucher from Bleacher Report and Fox Sports One. Buke, great stuff. Talk to you soon.
You got it.